I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Gallant Few Rangers podcast. My name is Mason Stewart and I'll be your host for another Premier League show. I feel like I say this every week, but so much to get through. It was an absolutely brilliant weekend of football. And with me tonight, we've got Colin back for this episode. How are you, Colin?
I'm good, Mason. Thanks for having me back on. And I know what you mean. Every week we say there's so much to get through. It's a full-time job to study for this podcast, by the way. But no, I'm looking forward to getting in about it.
It really is, mate. I spent a good 45 minutes earlier going through, you don't get a chance to watch sort of every game. You only get snippets, but loaded up and ready. But also we've got Jamie as well. How are you, Jamie?
I am so buzzing. I was even more buzzing when you messaged yesterday and said, do we all want to do it on Tuesday the 7th? So the 7th of March was really, really good for me. More reference to the number 7, but I'm sure we'll come to that later. I've had about 4 cans of 7 up today. I'm all 7'd out, but I'm absolutely, really good. Enjoy these podcasts, get to talk about the football. Finally enjoy this. Thanks for having me back.
Jamie, I'm just going to burst your bubble right now. Liverpool scoring 7 doesn't quite get the same reception for Mason and I, so apologies in advance if you don't quite get your enthusiasm matched.
Absolutely fine. I was determined whether to come up in full kit today or anything, but it's all about me. I'm good for it.
You know what? I weren't going to mention the us at all to talking about 7 because I said I'd never talk about it again. But I actually, it made me feel just a little bit better that they hit 7s against someone else this season. But let's get right onto that then, because that is a big one from this weekend. Jamie, I will come to you first to talk about Liverpool, but that's Liverpool now unbeaten in the last 7 games against Man United at home. Really is, always is a tough place for Man United to go, but even more so now. Salah, Nunes and Gakpo, especially second half, it was really, really good to watch. I'm not buying into this Gary Neville view that Man United were the better side first half.
That was clutching at straws, wasn't it? That was real clutching.
I thought it was always, don't get me wrong, Man United had a chance to take the lead, but I always thought it was Liverpool's game to lose. Gary Neville, I think Souness absolutely scored in there as well, I think, from the start to the end. But Jamie, what did you make of that performance overall for Liverpool?
Yeah, I think, to not say the obvious, shall we say, it was the performance that we've been begging for all season, because, let's face it, our form this season has been shocking. You know, from game to game, every time we get a win, we think, right, okay, now we're in the corner, and then we pull off a 0-0 draw. It's just not been great at all. If I'm honest, going into the game against Man United, I wasn't confident, even though we're at home. I thought we're going to go for a draw, we're going to nullify them, and we're going to sit and actually... What I was confident was that we could potentially pull off a clean sheet, because we've had a few clean sheets over the last few weeks. Some really big clean sheets. So I kind of actually had us down for a 0-0 draw. pleasantly surprised with that. I think you're right, the first half was very, very contested. It was inevitable Liverpool would come out the traps flying. The first 20 minutes were really Liverpool. And I think, see, when you look at it, it was actually one of the things that I've always noticed this season is that Andy Robertson gets a lot of plaudits, but this season he's probably not been to his best. And the way I would say it, it's not that his defender's been wrong, it's actually the way his movement forward is. Andy Robertson and Mane's telephony together, if you like, the way that they worked was so intertwined. They would give and go, they would overlap each other. Andy Robertson's had about three different people in front of him this season, and that relationship's not been there. Gakpo's obviously been used out on the left. At the weekend, it was Darwin that was out on the left, and you can start to see that that game, in that first half, there was a little bit of, you know, trust in terms of the positioning going, the running going, and you've seen that with Gakpo's goal, actually, the opener. It was actually the build-up on the left. He went on the left turn with the right foot and slotted it in the bottom, which was a fantastic goal, by the way. The way he sold the dummy on the two defenders. I'm super, super happy that, you know, we had a hard first half because, let's face it, Casemiro was just slightly offside with his goal. They missed another chance. So it was definitely to and fro, but the way that second half took off, I mean, nobody in their right mind would have predicted that. The second goal was tremendous. Gakpo again, getting down the side. That little flick that he does to kind of put it past the hair, that's outstanding. That's outstanding football. You know, I could sit and talk about each goal individual, but I'll save you the heartache of that. But I think for me, I think Gakpo's second goal was the best goal of the day, but the one that was most well-received was actually on the back of the news that Bobby Firmino, the seventh goal, Bobby announced the day before that he won't be signing a new contract. He spoke to Klopp and realised it's time for him to move on with this young emerging forward lineup that we've got, and he goes with the blessings. So for him to come on in the last 10 minutes, absolutely get a goal against Man United, you could see he pretty much had a tear in his eye, and he only played 10 minutes. He's well loved by the fans. It topped it off for us. The one thing I will say, I don't think it's a freak result, and I can say that because I'm a Liverpool fan, I'm blinkered. We've stuffed Man United fives and fours recently in the last 2 years at Anfield and at Old Trafford. I don't think those results are shocks. I think with the way the crowd is at Anfield, the way that they get on the back, I think Man United just literally just crumbled and just couldn't handle it. And you could see that in some of the postures from some of the players, which I'm sure everybody else has been talking about. I'm not buying into Man United were just terrible. I think those performances are in Liverpool right now. I just want to see them be more consistent with it. But brilliant result for us.
No, absolutely, and agree. It does annoy me, sort of, the last few days has been about sort of how bad Man United were. And I don't think, to be honest, there's been much credit for Liverpool. But we have to talk about Man United, Colin, and I'll come to you on them. It equals their biggest ever Premier League defeat. I think biggest defeat ever. I'm sure they said the 1930s against Wolves, am I right in saying? So unbelievable. And it's come, obviously, against their biggest rivals. What did you make of Man United? And I'm going to touch on this sort of now, but Bruno Fernandes and Luke Shaw were the two that kind of stood out. They absolutely chucked it.
Yeah, they two probably personify the points I'm going to make. Yeah, but just want to, like, taking the Rangers hat off, I'm going to slate Man United here, but I don't want to take anything away from Liverpool, because we too often... when we talk about games of football, it's either one team were great or the other team were terrible. It was both in this game. Liverpool were fantastic, and Jamie's right, you could go on about every goal individually and still no doubt justice. Man, you were in the game. They weren't the better side, as Gary was saying, but they definitely were in the game at halftime, and you were looking for them to just be a bit tidier on the ball, a bit more composed. But Jamie's kind of hitting a point there. It's not just against Liverpool. We've seen Man U capitulate time and time again. Was it Brentford earlier this season? It was 4-5-0. Over the last 18 months, this has happened a few times to Man U, home and away, against Liverpool, against other teams. And that's when we were speaking a couple of weeks ago about can they challenge for the title. I think we all said it would really depend if they, well, they can't challenge for the title. We all said if they can get second, it would really depend on how much Arsenal and Man City fall off. Because what Man U have been doing, they've not been blowing teams away, but they have been beating the teams that they need to do. But I think this is the remnants of the poor mentality that they've had over the last 4 or 5 years. They've done the early steps, getting rid of the prima donnas, if you like, the likes of Paul Pogba, Ronaldo, the really big toxic characters. But there is still that mentality, and that mentality I'm talking about is the unprofessionalism of it's getting too hard, so I'm going to chuck it. So with Fernandes and Shaw, senior players, big characters, or they should be big characters, it's no hard bag to what happened at Ibrox, but that was the most frustrating thing there. Like, better teams will always beat you. Sometimes better teams in the day will always beat you. If Man U came away with a 4-0 there, and the game finished at maybe 50, 60 minutes, it's one of those things. This isn't one of those things, and Ten Hag has to address that in the summer, because we, rightly so, they've been getting a lot of credit, and we're talking about it'd be great to see how they can add to the squad, but they need to add character to that squad, and I'm really disappointed in Fianuto, Shaw, Fernandes. I thought Casemiro might be one of the guys who can maybe, I don't think he was any worse or any better than the rest of them, but he's the kind of guy, that pit bull terrier who can maybe inspire a bit of grit, a bit of dig. Disappointed he didn't do that as well.
Yeah, no, he's been unbelievable for Man United this season, but even him, you're absolutely spot on. He looked like he weren't in the game, you know, again, and that's why I think I'm sort of absolutely right to dig out Man United, but I think Liverpool were that good second half, and they were clinical as well. Do you know when they're getting in, and I think it was a goal every 8 minutes, so it's just pure clinical. But definitely the biggest talking point for the weekend. Jamie, do you want to touch on anything from a Man United side before?
I think the one person I've got I feel sorry for was actually David De Gea. He was probably the only player that actually can come off that pitch with a bit of dignity, and he actually had to pick the ball at the net 7 times.
That's a bad day, isn't it? When your goalkeeper's your best player, and he's just chucked 7 goals.
When you think of it, like, none of the goals were like the dodgy spin off the keeper that's punted it back into the box or anything. They were all clinical finishes. He was the only one that was probably professional throughout the whole game. Bruno Fernandes he's one of those players, and I kind of agree with it when I hear it from Man U players. He's one of those ones that you want in your team. He's one of those ones you don't want to play against, because he's like that rat mentality. He's a shithouse. He does all the dodgy stuff. He does all the dark arts, and he kind of gets away with it when it's working. See, when it's not working, you look like an absolute fool. I think that was happening to him on Sunday. You know, everything from, I would say, shoved the linesman a little bit out of the way. He tried to stick the foot in on Bjatic when he came on, and Bjatic skipped it, and Bjatic then run 20 yards with the ball, and Fernandes just stood to the side with his hands up in the air, and you're going, why is he not tracking him? Why is he not chasing him back? There was loads of little pockets of things like that happening, and I think when your captain is doing that, it kind of breeds into the rest. The rest of the team. The one thing I will say is that I think Eric Ten Hag is the man to kind of fix that. He's proven already that he's got that mentality. There's so many stories flying about what happened, what did he say. I think the best one I've heard is that actually he screamed at them for about 3 minutes and then made them stop and didn't say nothing. And he said, listen, and all he made them do was made them listen to the Liverpool players celebrating in the next changing room. And he said, right, everybody to the coach. he took that personally. That's what you want from your manager, really. You know, we've moved on from the days of making players sit out in the middle of the park in front of everybody, getting a wee telling off. You remember the old hall days? But yeah, some of those players really need to take a look at themselves in terms of professionalism. I didn't think they covered themselves in glory much at all. Manu have been brilliant up until now in terms of a run of form, so it's not like they can't pull it back and get back on the trail. That wasn't a bad day in the office. That was a fucking shit day. So they just kind of need to fix that, and I hope they don't.
And I'll finish on this. If if a Rangers player went to Twitter after getting beat like that, we would go absolutely mental. I don't know why Marcus Rashford feels the need to tweet about it. It's absolutely bonkers. So deserves all
the. Is this the apology?
Yeah, just to apologise. Just have Twitter for a few weeks, few months. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? You've just been walloped. No one wants to hear it. But anyway, moving on. Colin, Arsenal, top of the league. Big, big win for them on Saturday. They were 2-0 down against Bournemouth. And they've come back, scored in the 97th minute, Reece Nelson with the winner. It feels like a big turning point, this, in the title race. It's the first time Arsenal have come back from two goals down since 2012. They come back and beat Spurs 5-2. I believe it's 62 games that they've not won by going down by two goals, and they've picked the right time to go and win that game on Saturday.
It's the absolute opposite of what I was saying about Man U there when we speak about character. And it's, again, I'm not going to rewrite history. These podcasts are recorded. So I did say that I thought this would be the beginning of a downward spiral for Arsenal when they go beat off Man City. That season defining moment that you're talking about there, I thought that was against Aston Villa. I feel right. They've only got one of those comebacks in them. But lo and behold, they've got another one, and it wasn't just Nathie chances. They took their chances. They kept on knocking and battering and battering. Bournemouth, who played really well for the first 50-60 minutes, Bournemouth credit to you. They have been a really good side to watch the last few weeks. But from an Arsenal point of view, we know they're a talented side. They know they're a really good footballing team. But that is what's been labelled at them. The character. I'm going to do a complete 180 on what I said a few weeks ago and think that's a kind of league winning results. Don't get me wrong, I think Man City and Arsenal will slip up. They both will still slip up. I just think Arsenal, they needed a character boost after that Man City game, and they've got two. I don't think they'll be taking it as, oh, we slipped up, we got lucky. I think you look at that performance and you look at, we dragged ourselves back into it.
I think you're absolutely spot on. I think it's one of them that gives the players even more sort of belief going forward. And I know you've been 2-0 down against Bournemouth, but Bournemouth are fighting for their life. And you still to come back and get a late winner, and just the way it happened. I've done a bit of a U-turn on it as well, because I think that maybe that does mean that the title is heading there. Jamie, for Bournemouth, though, that's now, I couldn't believe this when I see this earlier, that's in the last four times they've led by 2-0, they've lost three out of four, which is in the Premier League, which is, I suppose...
It's criminal.
Yeah, it's criminal. As I said, you're fighting for your life. Arsenal were poor. You're 2-0 up. You've got half hour left. Just that inexperience there. We said about the business they've done in January, which they've signed, you know, some up and coming talent for 50 million, which I still cannot believe. But they just lacked experience big time on Saturday. To at least come out of there with a point, to lose all three was criminal.
Yeah, I think Bournemouth are the exact opposite of what we've been talking about in recent weeks of relegation form. We've been talking about who can score goals. Do they have the goal scorers? Bournemouth are showing that they actually can get goals. They can actually score goals, and they're good for that. It's the back end that they struggle with. It's keeping clean sheets. It's keeping teams out. I remember watching the, I kind of watched the first start of the Arsenal game, and I was absolutely blown away with actually the start that they made. And it was good to see Gary O'Neill at the end of it actually talk about that's something they've been working on. That wasn't a real fluke. The fact that they had five people all running in tandem to kind of get into the box, and you've seen that the Arsenal defenders didn't have an actual clue what the hell was going on. It was it reminded me of, do you remember Conor Cody leaving the ball in the Merseyside derby for Gakpo to tap it in the back stick? That's exactly what Gabriel did. He just didn't touch it. And it went through to the boy that was kind of running in. Was it Billing? So Bournemouth have got these goals in him. But yeah, it was criminal to not come away with points in that game. I would argue whether Arsenal would be able to still pull that result off if it was a more experienced team, whether they would get away with that kind of result. The fact it was Bournemouth, though, you always felt that they were going to get back into it. Arsenal were going to get back into it. Even at 2, I think I remember seeing that when they were 2-0 down, the bookies only had them at 2-1 to win the game. Like, that's crazy. But again, it's because it's at Arsenal, it's the home team. I actually quite like Philip Billing. I remember watching him when he was at, I think it was Huddersfield he was at before he was at Bournemouth, and he plays a certain way. So, you know, he's very box to box. He likes a challenge, gets the odd yellow card every now and again. So I wasn't surprised to see that he scored, because he does chip in with a goal. But it's the experience that they just lack. You know, when you think of their defenders, they're either very, very old or they're very, very young and still new to it. I wasn't surprised to see Arsenal get the winner, and I think you are right. And those are the ones where you look back and go, they're the ones that kind of win your titles, the ones that you don't think you're going to get anything from it, but you do.
Behave yourself. It was the 97th minute, man. It's I know what you mean. See, at halftime, you're maybe thinking they'll get back in there. If Arsenal were 3-2 up with 15, 20 minutes to go, then you're right in the half is right, okay. They waited until they were 2-0 done to start playing, but it's a drama in this. Mm-hmm. Like, I know you both know me well. I'm a big one.
You love the drama.
I love the drama, the emotional side of the game, because I think that's what connects fans and players. And you looked at the Emirates Stadium, and it was absolute bedlam. A lot of pundits saying they've celebrated like they just won the league. No, that's a club in unison. It really is. And you don't get that if the winner's in the 75th minute.
Yeah. What I will say is I love Saka, watching him play. He would walk into 99% of the teams in England, in Europe, in my opinion. He's that good, and he's so young. I think when you've got him playing it, he's pumped the way he is. I think anything's possible. And Arsenal have just got that. They're doing really well with managing injuries as well at the moment. You know, they've had Partey out, and Jorginho's filled in. Partey's now back in the squad. They've had no Jesus for a period of time. Jesus looks to be coming back in the next couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, do they actually just keep motivating on? But outside of that, you can pretty much name their 10 or 11 players each week. I was surprised to see Ben White not start the game, and Tomiyasu, and he was hooked at half time, and Ben White obviously scored as part of the comeback. So you are right. Everything's in unison at the moment for Arsenal. They're doing really, really well. But, you know, when I think back when Liverpool won the Premier, when we won the league, it was those kind of results that you remember. They're the ones at the turning point for us. I think Colin called it earlier. The Aston Villa was probably the first time we actually believed it, or we actually looked at it and went, hard in a minute. Yeah. This one looks as though this is round number two, but I think there's a few more rounds to come.
Yeah, no, there's going to be bigger tests to come for Arsenal in the next few weeks, without doubt. But as we've already said, I think that was a big, big one Saturday. Colin, Man City were the early kickoff on Saturday. They were comfortable, to be honest, against Newcastle. It was never in doubt. 2-0 winners. They've actually beat Newcastle 14 consecutive times at home now. I think it's the most in the Premier League. In terms of a run. So again, those that you lack a bet, next time Man City get Newcastle at home, bet against it, because surely that's going to come to an end soon. But it was just a routine win for Man City on Saturday, and it was a no doubt 3 points.
Yeah, I think Man City routine is the best way you could put it, but what you said there, Mason. They didn't have to be excellent. They just done their business, took their chances, well, solid enough at the back. And that's the kind of steal that you expect Man City to kick into for the business end of the season. They don't have to be all flair, all guns blazing, just get the job done, get over the line. Phil Foden had a really good game, took his goal really well. And I was surprised to see him come back in. I know he's maybe in and out of the team, but I've not really rated him this season. No, I've not rated him. He's obviously a cracking player, but when you look at the players that Man City have and the strength and depth, I was surprised to see him come in again. Talk about it being the business end, the early kickoff, Newcastle, they're due a bit of a result. Didn't think he'd be the man to go in, but I thought he done really well. From a Newcastle point of view, again, disappointed. That's, how many games is that? That must be a few games without a win now.
Is it not since they've come back from the World Cup? I don't think they've won a game. I think it's seven or eight games. I'm pretty sure it's seven or eight because we said it last week. It's seven, so
it's not that they weren't terrible. Like I like the way Eddie Howe put it, said that they're really good between the boxes, but it's just that's a different level. You look at Man City compared to Newcastle. Man City will take their chances. They will be clinical. Newcastle just don't have that, and they don't have the siege mentality at the other end.
Yeah, no, definitely, and it comes sort of when I watch the game Saturday and I see Bernardo Silva getting on the score sheet, Foden getting on the score sheet, both of them having quite good games at this stage of the season. Will Pep sort of leave them in? And if they both hit form at this time, it could be bad news for the rest of the league. Jamie, what was your thoughts on Man City, but also Newcastle, because there was such a hype, as I said before that World Cup, about them? They were really comfortable in that top four, but we'll come on to Fulham a little bit later on. If Fulham would have won yesterday, they'd have gone level on points for Newcastle. So that just goes to show the dip that Newcastle have had.
I think my rationale would be two polar opposites, but the same issue. So we spoke when City were struggling. It wasn't that they were struggling to score goals. They were struggling to keep clean sheets. They kind of look as though they've sorted that now. They've settled as a back line. John Stones has been out for a period of time. So it looks as though they've got Nathan Ake, Akanji, and Kyle Walker that are playing the more prominent roles, and they're using wing-backs. They look to be settled on that now. Jack Grealish and Haaland have been staples as well. He's always played with them and rotated either Mahrez or Foden. So it's kind of, as you said, the business end. You're starting to see a bit of form, a bit of solidarity, starting to play with each other. If anything, I would actually call it Kevin De Bruyne doesn't look as good as he normally does. Like, he's not getting many assists. He's not getting much on. He's not controlling games the way he normally does. He was actually the one that was hooked for Bernardo Silva to come on. Bernardo Silva kind of come on and kind of added that enthusiasm into the midfield. So Pep's obviously seen something that we don't, but that's where they trust him. You know, they trust Pep to get these things right. Pep is always going to turn around and say that he knows what he wants from his team and how to go about it. I think he's settled on his defence now, and I think that's where we'll start to see Man City form more of a partnership in terms of the rest of the team being a bit more cohesive. And Newcastle's issue, it's the exact opposite. It's not, in my opinion, it's not the defence. It's the fact that they're very toothless up front. You know, when we were talking about Newcastle pre the World Cup, Callum Wilson was banging them in. We were talking about Callum Wilson actually being an opportunity to go to the World Cup because he was in so much good form. The boy Joe Linton was getting goals. Almiron, I mean, let's face it, Almiron's not going to have another season in his life compared to what he's had so far. So he was putting them in, and also Alexander Isak. But even it's his debut season, he's not had amazing amount of goals, but he's only got a handful of goals. But they were all chipping in. At the moment, you can't see who's going to get the goals. You can see Newcastle potentially keeping clean sheets because they've got the same back line. They've got Nick Pope and goals. The boy Botman, I think, has been brilliant for them this season alongside Kieran Trippier. So they seem to have nailed that. And the central midfield looks settled. It's just the strikers aren't putting it in the back of the net. And I think this is where we'll start to see Newcastle slip a little bit now, because it won't be for the lack of losing games, I think. I think it'll be more they're just going to keep drawing games. It's probably the issue that they're going to have.
No, absolutely spot on there. That's the last sort of four or five games I've watched Newcastle. It's that question, who's going to get them the goals? You know, that they've done well to sort of keep the clean sheets before the run they was on. But yeah, absolutely. And be interested to see how they respond to this, because there was such high praise, but now it's going the other way a little bit. So be interesting to watch that. But Colin, Chelsea, to be honest, boys, there's not much to say about this Chelsea game on Saturday. I know Jamie watched it, which I'll come on to him in a minute. But big win for Chelsea, though, Colin. Graham Potter's second win in 12, which is crazy, really, when you consider the money they spent, the players they've got. And it was the goal was from a set piece, Wesley Fofana. What was your thoughts on Chelsea getting a win, but also Leeds? I thought that was quite unlucky not to get something from the game, personally.
I'm absolutely delighted for Graham Potter. on his post-match interview, he looked as if he just finished a 16-hour shift, man. The guy he was delighted. He was drawn to his bed. Probably wrote a tan a bottle of wine when he wrote him, just to forget about the last few weeks. But no, I've said time to time, I really like him as a coach. I do want it to work out for him. So I'm delighted for him. Chelsea, first of all, I thought they were quite wasteful in front of goal. That final third, they're lacking that cohesion. I mean, it's not for one at a time. They get the shots away, but only three shots on target. And against relegation fodder right now, let's be honest, Leeds, Chelsea at home should be really looking to take the game to them. The highlight, but obviously Fofana. I don't know too much about that boy. Obviously, I know he's been injured for a long time, and I think that was his first game back, but it wasn't just his goal. I thought he was terrific playing out for the back. He really, sometimes he did miss out the midfield just with how clever his passing was. He was everywhere, and I know he got man of the match, and rightly so. On Leeds, it's the games that you play. Leeds have had this a few times where they are playing well, but they're not getting in from the game, and they need to stop that. It's going to do them more good to play shite and get a point or 3 points. They have played well since the manager left, but again, we said that at the time in January, they need to add goals, they need to add a bit of, and that's the problem for most of the bottom half of the table. I don't know where the goals come from, especially with Rodrigo being out. I do worry about Leeds, but Chelsea, I don't think this kick starts a run for Graham Potter, I'll be honest, but I hope it does. I like him.
Yeah, he's gone in there from walking into Chelsea looking like $1 million, isn't he? And then it's mad what a football management job can do to you, because he looks absolutely shattered. Jamie, anything to add on what Colin said there to sort of that game on Saturday? I know you really enjoyed watching this one.
Yeah, I stupidly had it on my bet, so I thought, well, I might as well watch it. And obviously all that just for it. Do you know what? I actually found it a slog watching them. Because I mean, at half time, the crowd were booing like really bad, and you think, oh, here it comes, it's starting now. They came out, and as you said, they got the goal, but it wasn't the thrills and spills that they were expecting. I think the first half, I think João Félix had hit the bar again. A lot goes through João Félix, and I think see if him and Sterling can start to link up properly. They start to feed each other, and I think stupidly, I think Havertz gets in the way. There was one at the weekend where I think somebody took a free kick and it actually hit Havertz, but it was going in. He was studying the way it was going into the top bin, and you think it's just not going for him at all. He's obviously not a number nine, but they don't have a number. Well, I'm going to say they don't have a number nine. They do. They have Aubameyang, but they refuse to play him. So they're obviously making do with what they have at the moment. It was just a long, hard slog, actually, watching them trying to get through the game. And as Colin said, you could see the drainage from Potter's face just to say, thank God that one's done. He's obviously been advised, if you believe some of the reports, that his next two or three games are do or die for him in terms of his management. I still think he goes outside of that. I just don't see this crowd, you know, clicking with him at all. He could probably scrape the next three games 1-0, and I think they would still ask for his blood. They're just not clicking with him at all. They're not liking his styles. Even this week, we started to hear rumours actually this week that some of the players are disillusioned with actually some of his team talks. Now, when that stuff starts to get leakage, then you know it's not good, because now the manager starts disbelieving who he can trust in the changing rooms first and foremost. So I think the writing's on the wall for him. I do think Potter's a good manager. I just think he's at Chelsea at the wrong time. But yeah, it was a slog to watch them get through that game against Leeds. I see that being the platform going forward for the remainder of the season. I think Leeds, I think Colin already touched on it, they just need Rodrigo back. Rodrigo makes them tick. He plays up front, but he comes so deep, gets involved in the play and plays off. Unfortunately, they can't rely on Bamford. He's never been the same after his bad injury that kind of cost him his England call-up as well. He's never really been the same since then. They brought this new guy in the January window, but I don't think I've seen him outside of the first game when he came in, the boy from Germany. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But I do believe Leeds will stay up, but I think it's from the home games they'll get from it, not anything away at the moment.
No, I think you're absolutely spot on there with about Leeds. And as from Graham Potter, I think if there was a style of play there and there was something we could see from Chelsea sort of going forward, you'd go, right, he'll get more time, but I just don't see it. But moving it on, Colin, this was the sort of biggest scoreline of the weekend other than the Liverpool rout against Man United. Brighton beat West Ham 4-0. It's quite a running joke that every time West Ham play Brighton, it's one to write off, because West Ham have never beat Brighton in the Premier League. Now 12 games, 6 wins for Brighton, 6 draws. As I said, we lined up that Saturday and sort of the talk was, put your bets on Brighton because they'll beat West Ham. But me and Jamie spent quite a bit of time talking about West Ham last week and how we thought their squad and the players they've got, David Moyes, they just off the back of a big 4-0 win against Nottingham Forest. Then go and turn that over with that result and the performance Saturday, by the way, it could have been more than 4. Just to touch back on West Ham, are they in trouble here? Could they actually go down? Because you know that old saying, too good to go down. I think they're in trouble.
Huge trouble. And I'm actually really surprised. I rate David Moyes as a manager. I really do. I've said that on here before. Brighton are a good side, and it finally clicked for Brighton, and West Ham are just unlucky. Like, Brighton dominate most of their games at home. They've just lacked that killer edge. West Ham are unlucky that they turned up in the day that they found it. But for West Ham, it's not the result, it's the performance. They look like a team going down. It's like similar to what we said with Man U. Not quite the chocolate levels of Man U, but just some of the misplaced passes, the kick and rush style, they panic more than anything. I don't think it's a chucking it thing, but they just don't believe it's going to come off of them. And that was well before they got to 3-4 nothing. When they went down, they didn't look themselves at all. That's the most worrying thing for me with Moyes, and I don't know how you turn that around in 3 months.
I'm going to ask you this one, and I'll ask Jamie as well. If you was the owners at West Ham, would you sack David Moyes?
No, because I think he's the man to get you back up for the Championship. I'll be honest. I think Moyes is really good. Once he's got it, harnessing squad cohesion, a good winning mentality. We've seen it at Everton, we've seen it at other clubs. Yeah, it's quite good that once he's got it, keeping it, it's just building that. So I think if he builds it in the Championship, then he'll be fine coming back up. And I think Jamie touched on this point a couple of weeks ago. Sam Allardyce isn't looking for a job. There's Sean Dyche, or your old school. I mean, Tony Pulis is probably, I don't know, fucking stocked up in a snooker hole somewhere, Dan and Smokey meeting Chris. these siege mentality managers, they're not looking for a job. I don't know who you bring in, and I don't know. It's not just wee tweaks here and there getting over the line. I do think you do need to do something big at West Ham. Moyes has either got to do it or he's not, but if he doesn't, he's the man to bring you back up.
Yeah, no, I'll come to you, Jamie, just to sort of on Brighton. At home, their home form, they're a really hard team to beat. And Colin touched on it there, the way they play. I think they've, don't get me wrong, Graham Potter deserves a lot of credit for the squad he built and the way he played, etc. at Brighton. But I think they've gone up a level with the new man. I think Zerbi, I think they've gone up a level. I watched Brighton now and you sort of say, don't fancy going there if you're one of the big six, especially at Brighton. But just to come sort of back to West Ham, they've not won now any away games in the last 11, which is worrying. Would you sack David Moyes?
So up until today, I would have said no. However, the rumblings that are coming across the line now is actually Michael Carrick, who's doing an amazing job at Middlesbrough, who's obviously a legend for West Ham as a player. A lot of the fans are now talking about Michael Carrick. Now, I don't necessarily think he's the man to fix that because obviously he's very limited in what he in experience and what he has. But when they start to when the fans are starting to call for certain people, it doesn't bode well for somebody like David Moyes, is probably my point. David Moyes used to be the person people would call for, bring an old head in, get him settled. The problem is they've kind of stagnated, and we forget that this is, am I right in thinking, this is David Moyes' second stint at West Ham?
Yeah.
So he's been fired from there before because they wanted to go a different route and bring in a different style. I think if the fans start keep calling for these kind of things, then, you know, West Ham have got a track record of probably doing these kind of deals in terms of getting rid of managers. I still think the West Ham team is too good to go down, but that would be very, very worried in that performance because as much as Brighton have been brilliant and dominant, there were certain mistakes that were happening. And I think it was specifically the second goal, the corner. When you see the slow-mo, there's a guy that literally 2 yards off the line, off the goal line, who never gets looked at by a defender. The ball drops to him and he's free. And you just think, that's Sunday League. That's not Premier League football. You're away from home. You're fighting for your life. What is it that you're missing there? You can say that they can't score goals, but when you're making really bad errors like that, that's pretty much, not that you're down in tools, but you're not doing what's being asked of you, if that makes sense. So it'd be interesting to know if the players are actually just getting disenchanted from David Moyes himself. And if that is the case, then I think a change is inevitable. I do believe they're too good to go down, but they're in a very precarious position that they can fall back into, you know, that bottom three, if you like. It took them so long to get out the bottom three, actually, is probably the best way to put it. It took them so long to get it back out the bottom three, they're in very quick danger of just slipping straight back into it. And we've talked about some of the results that some of these teams are pulling off. They're getting points. Once you're in it, it's going to be very, very hard to get back out of it. And I think, see if they were to drop back in it, I think they would pull the pin.
Yeah.
That would be the challenge.
It's an interesting one because, I'll be honest, it's easy for me to say I'm not a West Ham fan. You're sort of watching as a neutral. But if I would, that whole bottom lot, and it goes from 20 up to 13th, that can all still go down, and it wouldn't surprise me if any of them...
It's like 4 points, you know, between them all or something, isn't it?
Crazy, isn't it? But I would pick David Moyes as my manager out of all the rest.
To come in and fix it.
I'd want Moyes out of all the rest of the managers. So it's easy for me to say, because I'm not a West Ham fan, but if you're telling me you're going to sack Moyes now and go and get, and that should never be the argument, by the way, to go and get a new manager, but who else are you going to get? We've seen it with Leeds and Southampton. They couldn't even get top managers because they're saying, you could go down, I don't want to be in the Championship next season. So, and you said that Michael Carrick, I've seen it all day today. That would be absolute mental. For me.
Of course it would. It'd be mental for Michael Carrick to take it, considering the job he's doing at Middlesbrough right now. Like he's in contention. I think he's only 4 points behind Sheffield United of getting that second spot. He'd be absolutely mental to kind of ditch that, considering what he could do right now. But again, we were talking about it. The Premier League talks, The Premier League money is completely different. It turns people's eyes.
I think Carrick would walk there.
He would
work with that squad, and I think you'd fancy himself to keep him up. I just think it'd be a huge, it'd be a bigger gamble for West Ham than it would be for Michael Carrick.
Just on West Ham, like, but we're now going to be getting to the stage where a lot of teams are playing with each other, and the results will matter. No, the results, sorry. Obviously, the results matter, Colin. The fixture list matters. If I look at West Ham's next two fixtures, they're away to Villa. No, sorry, home to Villa. Then they've got Southampton. See if they can get a point at Villa. Even at home, get 3 points. Something for that game. Then Southampton, they're potentially got to go 4 or 6 points clear of Southampton. They've got Man U next. You could flip that.
See if they don't beat Villa, he's probably gone. Yeah. That's probably the right answer. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know if he goes after Villa. I think, well, saying that, if he doesn't go after Villa, I think it's too late. but I think if they were going to do it, they would have already done it by now.
Yeah,
I agree, Colin. I think if they would have pulled the plug on Wes, they'd have done it now. There was rumours going about before, just after the World Cup, and they got beat comfortably by Leicester. And the board were like, there is no chance we get rid of David Moyes. And it looks like they're sort of standing by that. But
do you not think that game's written in the stars for Danny Ings to get the winner?
Even
Villa going to West Ham hasn't, you know, very inconsistent with his performances and gets the winner.
Absolutely. Off the bench, 1-0 Ings. But we'll come to Aston Villa in a minute. Colin, Wolves beat Spurs 1-0, which I thought for me was quite a shock. Me and Jamie said last week after Tottenham beating Chelsea that we fancy them to go on a little bit of a run. Every time we say that, they go and lose. To be honest, that's three at their last four away games they've been beaten. So, you know, away form for Spurs is a big, big problem. But for Wolves, a huge win, because obviously they're down there as well. All five wins at home have all been to nil. If they concede the first goal, they are banging trouble. But if they get the first goal and they manage to score a late one at the weekend.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On Spurs first, I do like seeing them fuck up after the whole Super League stuff. The fact they put themselves in a kind of elite club bracket, get up, you. Wills, you're right. Yeah, you need to know how and when you can pick up points, and they know that, like, they need to get the goal. Not even an early goal, they just need to be a bit better at the back. They need to be solid there, and I thought they were. First half, Spurs probably unlucky not to go ahead. I think TalkSport and Match of the Day touched on it. The subs, Big Jules made it. Was it half time, and he went to three at the back, and he pressed Spurs a lot more. Like, the ball was a lot more fluid. He gave the attackers a lot more space to run into. That was a masterstroke. Spurs didn't know how to handle that. And the goal, I thought, Traore. I like him. He gets a bit of a bad rep at times, I think, because how inconsistent he is. But like, we speak about it all the time, even with Rangers players, I like a player with kind of raw power, just that big brute of a guy. I was pleased to see him get the goal, but no, I think he's a decent win for Wolves. probably one that when you look at between now and the end of the season, when they're trying to tally up with the points comfy, 3 points extra that they might have wrote off. I think they may be looking to try and get a point there. So that's got to go a long way to making them feel much more comfortable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I saying that about, sorry, David Moyes there a minute ago, but Big Jules is a good manager as well, to be fair. Maybe that's one for the way that
he's good.
He'll keep Wolves up comfortably. And I think, you know, little changes like that. And as I said, they've had, you know, striker problems all season, Wolves, but I think they'll be all right. Jamie, what did you make of Spurs? Obviously, yeah, we said last week they were going a little run and that completely backfired. Yeah. Bad result. 22 shots on goal.
Yeah.
Nothing to sort of answer
for it. Yeah. So the first thing, I seen a stat the other day, and it's probably sums Wolves up. The last striker to score for Wolves was on the 7th of January. Like, all their goals come from other people. They don't, their out and out strikers just don't get it. So you know, it doesn't surprise me it was Traore that got the goal, for example. Spurs, I think it's completely opposite. Spurs, I think, as you said, they hit the ball three times. I think Pedro Porro, Son hit the ball, and I think there was somebody else that hit the ball in the space of 90 minutes. So it's not like they're not attacking. Where I would call Spurs out, if you like, is 60 million Richarlison hasn't scored yet for the club. This is the guy who'd been loaded at the World Cup. I'll firstly admit he's obviously been restricted for performance, you know, getting minutes on the pitch, but 60 million on a known goal scorer, I think that's went under the radar quite a lot this season. When you look at some of the people that have been getting stick in terms of, you know, underperforming, shall we say, 60 million on a striker that hasn't scored yet is terrible. And I think there's one even worse. Spurs made a massive last ditch effort on the last day of the transfer window to bring in Dan Juma. He's played 54 minutes since they signed him, and only 11 of them have been in the Premier League. That, I don't get that. Why would you go to those lengths to kind of bring in these kind of people and refuse to play them? I don't get that at all. You know, the thing I have with Kane is that Kane constantly comes deep for the ball. And when he comes deep, he's always the link-up man, and there's nobody there to kind of get the ball up to a striker, which where Kane should be. They're talking about Son as potentially not firing. I get that, but he's Kulusevski. Kulusevski, I think, was the first person to get subbed at the weekend. But again, you don't bring on another striker. You've got Danjuma, for example. As I said, they kind of hijacked that deal off Everton at the last minute. I don't get what Spurs' philosophy is, what, you know, how they're trying to go about it. You know, it's a bit of a strange one, and I think that'll be the pattern for the remainder of the season. I don't see them finishing in the fourth spot. I think they'll miss out.
Yeah, no, I've changed my mind on that as well. I agree, Jamie. I think they're too inconsistent, and 60 million on Richarlison at the time, I said that is utterly mental. And it's just, yeah, and Dan Juma is just a panic buy, isn't it? Let's be honest. That's who can we get last minute to help?
The thing is, you go back to the cup game, you know, the one that they lost against Sheffield United, and they started with Lucas Moura, who they've already confirmed is not going to stay with the club in the summer. So why would you not play Dan Juma? Do you know what I mean? Like, I just don't get the thought process of why they're trying and what they're trying and what they're trying to get out of it, because I think even the fans are getting a bit disillusioned with it.
No, it's a crazy one, but no, Conte will be back in. I think the stands back, you know, for this game at the weekend, which might make a big difference. But Colin, moving it on, my favourite game this weekend, sort of as a neutral watching the games this weekend, was Forest 2, Everton 2. Just pure entertainment. It was two teams going right at it, desperate for 3 points. Brilliant game for a neutral, as I say. Everton are now winless in their last 9 away games. But this was a stat that sort of shocked me today with Forest, is they're unbeaten in their last 9 home games, which is the second best home run in the Premier League, other than the Man United that are 11. And it's their best home form since 1995-96. So it sort of goes to show both ends there with Forest and Everton. What was your thoughts on that game on Sunday?
It was a really good game. It's not something you really put into the same sentence as Sean Dyche, a team going for it, especially away from home. I think we all predicted that we're going to see quite a few weeks of Everton just being very turgid to play against, making it difficult for teams to try and bring them down. So I'm really surprised to see them actually go out and take the lead. That caught me off guard. And then, as you say, it was end to end. Both of them went for it. In terms of how this sits for both teams, Everton needed to win that. There's no many games that they're going to get two goals away from home. It might not be for want of time, but I just don't think they're set up to go and take teams to the sword. So when you get 2-1 up with 20 minutes to go, you need to see that out. They might have thought points a good result beforehand, but looking at their next few fixtures, I'm pretty sure they've got Chelsea, they've got Man City as well. It's not really until like the 15th of April they're at home to Fulham, which maybe you can get something from, then Crystal Palace away. So they've got a tough run in. They needed that 3 points, and I think Forest, they'll probably see as a point, 2 points dropped as well, to be fair.
Yeah, no, it's watching it that second half, I just said the whole time, I was watching it with my cousin, and he had a 2-1 Everton, so he was sort of, when that's coming, I said, there's no way Forest don't score. It was inevitable, and I think that sort of sums up Everton. But Jamie, what was your thoughts on the game, but also Brennan Johnson scoring both goals? I thought he had a really good game, looked lively. The second goal, by the way, is an absolute cracker.
We said a couple of weeks ago he probably scored the goal of the weekend, didn't we? I forget who it was against. He scored an absolute peach. He's obviously their biggest commodity this season by a country mile. I think Everton, though, I think you guys were talking recently about the Dyche ball and obviously how he sets up. Sunday was the first time he actually started Damien Gray. And he's obviously the one that got the opener. I don't think that's a coincidence. You know, he's obviously their best attacking talent that they have. He's the one that can go in behind, and he's not an out-and-out striker, but when you put him up against people like Neil Mopey and the likes of that, I think he is a standout. I think it's a bigger point for Everton what it is for Nottingham Forest. I think Colin touched on that. It's obviously a bigger point, which is. But I still see them being very, very patchy. We talk about their home form probably being their best option in order to stay up. But I just don't see it. I think they're too inconsistent. Too many people not playing as great as they probably should. Am I right in thinking they were ahead twice in the game? They were 1-0 up, 1-1, 2-1 up, and then it finished 2-2. So they've let two leads slip. You know, no, very, very similar to Bournemouth in some aspects, if you like. You would expect Everton to have seen that out, you know, if they were having that die-hard attitude to kind of see it out. But I think Brennan Johnson was obviously the difference. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the mid-tables in the Premier League would be having a look at him, going into the close season, just because what I like about him is he doesn't stop running. I've seen him even in the Liverpool games. He doesn't shy away from, you know, a forward run with, you know, getting involved in hustling with the right back and the left backs. He's a very positive, forward thinking person from their team, and I quite like him.
Yeah, no, he really impressed me. He was the sort of, I say the quality, I didn't think it was much quality in the game on Sunday, but he was the one that looked like he had it in abundance. Colin, let's move it on then. Aston Villa 1-1 against Palace. Again, not much going on in this game. Another clean sheet for Villa and another win. Since Emery took over the 12 games, Villa have scored in every game. So he's definitely improved that area. One of the criticisms of Gerrard was there was no goals in the team. So he's fit that, and he's managing to get a couple of clean sheets. But then Palace, that's again another game without a win. They're going to get dragged into it, I think, quite quickly.
They're in trouble. They are going to get dragged in. They're only 5 points clear the relegation zone. I was actually, when I seen the lineups, I thought Zaha back, that's maybe what they have been lacking, because it's been these, they've not played terrible, Palace. Again, like a lot of these teams, probably similar to Leeds, they've not been playing that bad, just no seeing teams off or just being good enough in both boxes. So I thought with Zaha being back, that's maybe what they need. And away to Villa, I did fancy them going in, I'll be honest. Then Zaha very nearly put number nothing up. He was marginally offside, but I thought that was going to really kick on, kick Palace on, but it didn't. Villa took their goal really well, and I know it was an own goal, but they forced it. I think that's the thing with Emery, there is goals coming from elsewhere on the pitch because they are trying different channels of attack. It's not just through the middle, they're not just getting it to the byline and crosses in. They do make defences think, and Emery has always been very good at that, having different styles of attack. And I thought you seen John McGinn link up really well, like box to box. I thought Emery's starting to get the best out of him. And then, is it that boy, Decore? He was just an idiot. Two stupid fouls, especially the second one. He should never be going anywhere near that tackle. Arguments to say that it could have been a straight sending off if he hadn't been booked. But at that point, as soon as 10 men down, 1-0 down, I didn't fancy Palace at all.
No, they needed to get sent out of the game the weekend, Palace, because They've got a tough run in as well. Jamie, what was your thoughts on that one on Saturday? That was obviously a good win for Villa, but alarm bells for Palace.
Yeah, and Villa must have had their head in their hands in the first minute when Zaha goes through and scores and it's ruled out for offside, because that's obviously Zaha's first goal game back, and you just think, oh, here they go. Here he comes back, and they're going to get back in the goals, but yeah, they didn't really trouble Villa. It turned out to be a bit of a nothing game, but Villa still needed the win to kind of get themselves out of the trouble. Palace are probably one or two of those wins away from staying out of the relegation fight, but the longer they wait, the more it looks like they're going to get dragged into it. Decore, he was just rash in everything that he did. You can make an argument he probably should have gone for the one he had the yellow card for at the first one. It was that way with his studs. You could have made a case for it. But yeah, they just don't look as though they're scoring many goals at all. Then there's no consistency from them from a forward attacking play. So I'm anticipating they get dragged into it. But Villa will be fine now. They've obviously been a bit of a topsy-turvy. They've had a couple of results, then they've not done well in the results. So they've had a shock defeat, and then they've had to go get another win. I think this Villa is typical Villa. Now they'll be looking at the end of the season. It can't come quick enough for them.
Yeah, no, definitely. And Jamie, I'll stay with you because we've only got a couple more games to sort of go through now. And Southampton, the late game on Saturday, managed to get a win against Leicester. Big win for them. They've done a double over Leicester this season, which sort of shows you kind of season Leicester are having as well. But that's a huge win for Southampton. That's now two wins out of three for the new manager.
Yeah, the loss by Leicester was not surprising at all. I fully had Southampton on one of my coupons. Just the rest of the teams led it all down. Yeah, Southampton have probably got a dogged performance like that from home. Leicester were just really, really poor. Leicester probably should have been about three or four goals up by the time Southampton actually did put the ball in the net. They were just firing. You know, they weren't clinical in their usual way. But we've been saying since the start that we fancied Leicester to probably dip in and out of this relegation fight as well. Again, they've probably now got the goals in them. The fact that Madison's back, I would say that they probably do have the goals in them. I don't see them getting too dogged with it. But Vardy still's not getting picked, is he? Vardy's still, there's some, I don't know whether he's now just turned the corner and they're maybe looking at moving on from Vardy. If that's the case, they've got a young, absolute whippersnapper in Daka that just doesn't get a game, and I don't get why he's not getting a game either. So, they did have this debt hanging over them that's now looks to have been cleared by the owners. So they are going into the new season debt-free. Whether that means Rodgers is going to have some money to play with, I don't know. It probably means by the sale of Nat Madison, he probably gets to use that money in terms of re-putting it back into the team. But I wasn't surprised that they lost at the weekend. But I think if they keep Madison fit, then they should be fine.
Yeah, we spoke about this at length last week about Brendan Rodgers. Colin, what's your thoughts on Leicester this season, and do you see Rodgers there next season?
I'm sure I said maybe about a month ago, I get the impression Rodgers has walked in his ticket. I think he does have that ego. And let's not get away from it. He's a good manager, but I don't think he sees himself there long-term at Leicester. And I think he's been working his ticket for a long time. I do think they were a bit unlucky at the weekend. And I think when it's games like that, it adds to the frustration of Brendan Rodgers, because he sees himself as being at that higher level. Problem is, who takes him? Because he's not going to get anywhere near a top six job. I don't think he's the type of guy to go abroad. Although he might prefer a natural tan as opposed to the old Saint Tropez fake tan. So you're really looking for, I don't know, like a Fulham or a Brentford or somebody to lose a manager. And he might be, I actually do think the way these teams are going in that trajectory there, he might be that kind of top 10 player, top 10 size club who are looking to break into the top six. He might be your man for that, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
No, yeah, I agree with you. On Rodgers, I think he is working his ticket as well. And I'm going to throw one out there. If they stay up, West Ham. But but anyway, last game, Jamie, then of this weekend was last night, Monday night, Brentford. I put classy Brentford here because I really like watching Brentford. And I actually said last night, in hindsight, Chelsea may have been better going for Thomas Frank that instead of Graham Potter. I think if Frank was English, I think he'd be there instead of Potter. But that's obviously another debate. What did you make of that game last night? And, you know, as I said earlier, it was a big opportunity missed for Fulham to close the gap and go level with Newcastle.
Yeah, I think it was one, there was going to be goals in the game for a start. We could tell because the way the two teams have been playing. I do think it was the right results. I think Brentford were probably the better team on the night. You kind of forget how much actually goes through Ivan Toney. They rely on him. Like he's so dominant in the air. I know he took the penalty really well, and there's this big stat going about his penalties that he's doing now, which is absolutely fine, but it's actually his all-round game. He's actually really, really good. I really enjoy watching him. And you can tell when he's playing, the Brentford kind of click. I'm also a big fan of the winger that they've got. Is it Visa? He's brilliant. He's rapid as well, and they've got that Danish Norwegian vibe in the midfield. The Damsgaard, who had a brilliant World Cup. It was at the Euro, sorry, beforehand. He was brilliant, and just quite surprised when they actually managed to get him. So, but they've got pockets of quality all over the team. The boy Pinnock, I think he scored last night. That's his first goal he's ever scored. But he's been a stalwart at the back for them. Him and Ben May have actually been really, really good. Where they will struggle is they're just waiting to find out what Ivan Toney's punishment is going to be for this, this betting charge or betting charges, shall we say, because if he is going to be out, and it looks, and I think going, you know, just on that, precedents have been set with bans for people like Kieran Trippier, Joey Barton. There's been a multitude of kind of bans and what they've been banned for. So they're looking, the talk is they're probably going to be looking at best part of a 6-month ban, but it won't be months, it'll be time, because if they ban him now, 3 months of it will be in the close season. But actually, I think what they're looking at is actually 3-6 months worth of games. So again, it's going to be, that'll be a tough one for them to take. So that means Brentford will need to dip into the market and do something in his absence. But there's also talk about the goalkeeper, the boy Raya, who's been arguably one of their better players over the last couple of years. Apparently, he's rejected three contracts. So there's a very strong possibility he's not going to be there. I really like Brentford, though. I think their biggest danger is, I think one of you guys said it, if Thomas Yanka leaves them. I don't think he'll want to leave them, but I think if a top six club come knocking at the door, it'll be very hard for, not for Brentford to say no, it'll be very hard for Thomas Yanka to say no. He does have those Potter vibes, though, where he's embedded into the team, and he's got a hand in all the structure of how it's put together and stuff. But you have to admire what he's done there. You really do. For Fulham, I don't see a negative in them losing last night, because they've been, in my opinion, they've been punching above the weight for the majority of the season. We were always going to be whether or not they could keep that form going. I'm more impressed with people like Solomon starting to kick into gear. Like, that lad's just on fire right now. I mean, even Mitch, nobody's talking about Mitrovic not scoring goals, because actually, you know, other people are starting to chip in. So they massively missed the boy Polina last night, because he's obviously had the double ban. He's got missing for two games over his 10 yellows. The boy Lukic come in, and the first thing he did was get a yellow card. So he's obviously another player in that kind of mould. But he probably should have been sent off, actually, for his challenge. That was a pity. You know, he probably had a couple of dodgy ones in, and he got hooked about 60 minutes in, and they had to kind of change the shape a little bit. But no, I don't begrudge Fulham not getting anything from that game last night, because I think they did really well. But I think it was a good win for Brentford, because it means that they've still got that charge on, I feel like.
No, absolutely. And Colin, just to sort of, you know, on that game last night, Brentford, their recruitment has been absolutely phenomenal. And it just goes to show what happens when you've got someone that knows what they're doing and has got an eye for a player. Rangers take note. But they've really, really recruited well. And it's going to, you know, just touching on there what Jamie said about Tony, I think that it might actually mean that he stays there another season. Yeah. This is 6 months, but they're going to have to, you know, go into the market and replace him anyway. So I think it was inevitable that was going to happen this summer. But what's your thoughts on sort of both them teams? Because they both are punching above their weight, but they've both been impressive this season and deserve a lot of credit.
I wanted both teams to win last night, honestly. I really like them. It's just this whole, I said it before, like, clubs building the right way and just coming in and having a game, having a go. It's not because it was Brentford that Fulham had a goal last night, and it's not because it was Fulham that Brentford had a goal last night. They've just set up to play football really well, and it's paid dividends, and it doesn't always work out like that. How many teams come up to the Premier League, don't adapt for how they played in the Championship, and they just get studied back down? So, no, I've got a lot of time for both of these teams. He's talking about the Brentford manager there, but I've always really liked Marco Silva, and I actually think when we're talking about Chelsea job, you know, teams like Chelsea, they do go for they'll go around in cycles. So they've had the tactical masterclass of a German coach, then that didn't work, so they went for the solid English appointment. This should be the sexy Spaniard, or Portuguese, you know. I think that might be a shout for when Potter eventually gets his jotters. Recruitment for both teams has been really well, but I think you've made a really good point there, Mason, about Tony. I don't think they do keep him in the summer if he's going to be, if he's not barred for 6 months. But I think thinking over the next 18 months, Brentford should be looking for somebody in that mould of Ivan Toney. And you're not going to get somebody of that calibre, but they should be looking to maybe take a gamble on maybe one or two strikers of potential and hope that they can maybe get by in the first 6 months until Toney comes back. Toney comes back, gives them a boost for the business end of the season. And then hopefully in a year's time, they've got two ready-made replacements when they sell Tony off for millions.
Do you know what Brentford are really good at? Taking players from lower leagues and turning them into better players. I wouldn't be surprised if in their hunt for a replacement is if they didn't take a punt on somebody that's doing really well. For example, like the lad that's at Middlesbrough right now, Totally different kind of player. Well, Akpo, like, he's a totally different kind of player, but scoring a bundle of goals. You've got the boy at Coventry right now that's doing really well as well.
You know what? Like, funny you say that, Jamie. Victor Gyökeres, they've been linked with him.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was somebody like that they brought in, because Brentford would get away with a deal with something like £10 million, but they were like a 40% sell-on fee if the player moved on to another club, which is what they normally make their business from. I think they did that with Benrabi, was that right? I think they paid a couple of million for him, and they put it into West Ham, and they made an absolute fortune off him. The sell-on clause going.
And Ollie Watkins as well.
Ollie Watkins, that was the other one. So Brentford have got history for that kind of thing. I wouldn't be surprised if they took a punt on whoever doesn't get promoted in the Championship, if they took like a punt on one of their strikers and brought them through. I think Brentford are more likely to do that than a team like Fulham.
Yeah.
And I think Thomas Young has probably got a bit more in the bank for something like that. So I wouldn't be worried about Brentford, at least.
No. No, it just goes to show Brentford were one of the first teams as well to get rid of their academy.
They did. That's true.
Everyone sort of went, what are they doing that for? But their recruitment has been that good. And as you said, Jamie, there's the sell-on fees, etc. But they're really going, it's a place you go, you improve, and you go on to bigger and better things. And that's what Brentford are ever going to be. But they're content with that, and they're doing really well with it as well. But, gents, that's the 10 games done, and we've gone through them all. But as always, we finish on a little question, trivia question. So, listeners, please get your answer in there for us. Colin, I'll come to you first. Who is the best player to not win the Premier League, apart from the obvious one, Steven Gerrard? Who's your pick?
I was really annoyed at myself because I sent this in the chat last week thinking that he's were going to cover it last week and I didn't have to answer it. Then he said, you're going to pick it this week. I'm like, fuck. It's so difficult. It's, when you think back to some of the great players, and I narrowed it down to two Spurs attackers. Controversial, but I'm trying to base it on their impact in the team and their kind of status as a Premier League player, not really what they've done elsewhere. Robbie Keane, before he went to Celtic, I always had a soft spot for him. I really liked him as a player. And kind of looking at the appearances and the goals he's racked up for Spurs, he was up there. But it's maybe a wee bit of recency bias here, but I think if I'm basing on absolute talent, Gareth Bale, it has to be. And this isn't to do what, this isn't to say because he went on to win European Cups with Real Madrid, he was at an elite level when he left Spurs. I think he went on to an elite plus one level, and he was in the top five players for a long time in the world, that is. But I thought he was unplayable for his last, 12 to 18 months in the Premier League. Frightening. And when you look at the journey, this wee goofy looking left back for Southampton, who couldn't defend for love nor money, just turns into an absolute savage beast. Again, he had the mixture of raw power, strength, speed, but the talent and the finesse to go along with it. I adored watching Gareth Bale in the Premier League. Obviously, I've seen a lot more in the Premier League than I ever have La Liga. It's not a league I really watch. So Gareth Bale for me.
Nice, it's a great shout. I've got him written down. He wouldn't be my pick, but just because I don't the time he was in the Premier League. But what a player! And see him live just before he left, and he was incredible. No, it's a good shout, Colin. Jamie, who's your pick?
So not Gerrard, not Carragher, not Pepe Reina. I could go through the list, but I wanted
Steve
to go back
to
Steve Finnan. Here, there's a pub quiz question about Steve Finnan. I'll come back to that one, though. But I wanted to probably go a bit completely different. I think Gareth Bale is the easy answer. So, but what I mean is, what we got to see with Gareth Bale was actually how he matured through the levels of being a youngster, going from left back, Harry Redknapp, giving him a shot up front, and he kind of blew the opposition away, and I think he was tremendous, and I thoroughly enjoyed. However, I'm going to go a bit old school, and I'm going to call it Gianfranco Zola. Gianfranco Zola, an absolute legend of the game, an absolute legend of the Premier League, never to win an absolute Premier League title, is an absolute criminal. When you think of the stature of the player, you know, he's a legend in himself. Nobody would have ever denied somebody like that kind of player in their team. He was that good. And when you look back and think that he never won a league title with Chelsea, you think, really? Really? That's, you know, I'd also give a mention to somebody like Marcel Desailly. I love Desailly. I played right back when I was at school. So I always looked at it. So you remember the old FIFA days, and it was always Maldini and Desailly as your centre backs that you kind of had. But I'm going to go with Franco Zola. I think you find half of his goals in the top 50 of the Premier League history highlights. You know what I mean? That quality of play, and you think to never actually win the league is actually criminal.
You stole my thunder there, mate. So I had Zola as well, and I think you just listed some brilliant points. But another couple of players I will sort of give an honourable mention to would be Matt Le Tissier, Jermaine Defoe, and Modric and Suarez. But
Modric would be another one, yeah.
Yeah, just and Suarez was he's one of the. If I had to pick a Premier League 11, maybe we'll come on to that in a different pod. But Suarez would be in there as well for a couple of seasons. But I tell you who's going to be in there, either way it's going, Harry Kane. Either way it's going, he'll be one. If he doesn't get a move soon, he'll be one that we throw in that category.
So I think the problem is with Harry Kane now, and you're starting to hear a lot of rumbling about it now, is that Daniel Levy will not sell Kane to anybody in the Premier League for less than 120 million, in my opinion. And I don't think people are going to pay that when there's so many good options on the market at the moment. As an example, everybody always puts Harry Kane and Man United together, and I completely understand why. Ten Hag's not that kind of manager, in my opinion. I think they'll start looking at somebody like Victor Osimhen at Napoli, yeah, who's going to be a fraction of their price, but on better wages than what they would have to pay for Harry Kane. I think Harry Kane has to go abroad if he's to move away from Tottenham, and therefore he will be in that bracket of being not, and you know, one of the best players to not win a Premier League. I think the ship's sailed for Harry Kane, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
I said a couple of weeks ago, and it might sound harsh, in 10, 15 years' time, Harry Kane's going to be a pub quiz question. Mm-hmm. Just like Alan Shearer's turning into it as well. Like Alan Shearer has that trophy underneath his bag, but Harry Kane should have ended his contract. He should have known Daniel Levy was going to be like that, and he's breaking some records, but at the end of the day, it's big shiny things that you turn up to play football with. It's an absolute waste of a career. That's very, very harsh. Sorry. Probably a waste of potential in terms of what a career should have won.
No, absolutely, Colin. Absolutely agree. And agree with you, Jamie. I can see him going abroad as well. Mm-hmm. But that'd be one for the summer. But gents, all I can do is say, Colin, thanks for coming on tonight, mate. Really enjoyed that.
No problem. Been back on. Cheers, lads.
And Jamie, as always, thanks for tonight.
Good man, thank you very much. Looking forward to this weekend's fixtures already. Liverpool beat Man United 7-0. We've got Bournemouth at the weekend, so it's got 0-0 because it's the early game. It's got 0-0 written all over it. So I'll be looking to tuck my tail between my legs next week. But yeah, thanks very much for having me on.
The season that Liverpool had, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? It's a no-brainer. Everyone's stick on a Bournemouth draw or Bournemouth win this weekend. Now, as always, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week to go through another Premier League show.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.